Welcome to Coffee Break with the Dancing Housewife. My name is Antoinette Daytalk, and I am your host. If you're a competitive ballroom dancer, a social dancer, or simply someone who wants to learn a little bit more about the fascinating world of ballroom dance, this podcast is for you. So grab yourself a cup of joe and join me for episode 3, What Judges Think When They Watch You Dance with John Swick. Do you ever wonder what judges are thinking when they watch you dance? I do all the time. And joining me today to help answer that question is multi-style adjudicator, the distinguished John Swick. John began his professional ballroom dance career in 1975, and after only 4 months of training, became the Fred Astaire National Rising Star Champion. Additional competitive highlights include 5 national professional titles with Fred Astaire Studios, United States Championship finalist in American Smooth and Rhythm, as well as U.S. Open to the World bronze medalist and North American winner in International Ballroom. Upon retiring from competition, John became and remains to this day a successful coach, judge, chair of judges, and master of ceremonies. Thank you so much for taking a coffee break with me today, John.
My pleasure.
Since we only have 15 minutes, let's dive right into picking your brain.
Okay.
First, yes or no to tanning?
Yes. I love tanning. When I was competing for 10 years, I always tanned. Unfortunately, we didn't have bronzer. We didn't have everything we have today. So I was in the sun a lot.
Oh, yeah. Bad for your skin.
Do I let that interfere with my judging? No. I love a tan face. I love color on a body. There's nothing wrong with white pasty people,
right?
But the whole premise is there are certain things that I am allowed to assess for my judging ballot, and some things I am required not to use. So does tanning interfere with my marks? No, I can't allow that to happen. But I love tanning, and I think it looks great. And isn't it sad that if you go in the sun, you're very unhealthy for your body 30 or 40 years down the line, and yet you look healthy when you're tanned.
I know. I actually, I was on a crusade at one point to get everybody I was competing with or against to boycott tanning because I had a skin reaction to the spray tan that I was using, and I was afraid to go into tanning beds. And then lo and behold, all these new products hit the market. And
yep.
The bottom line for me, the reason why I keep doing it is because I'm just not as lovely as I used to be 40 years ago. And I think it makes my skin, I just think I look better under the lights with a tan. All right, next topic, John. What are your thoughts on fishnets? Do ladies need to wear them? Do they not need to wear them? Does it impact you much?
It doesn't impact me. The whole premise is that you want color on your legs. So if you tan, if you make up, if you put fishnets or you put hose, or they make these great, Capizio makes these great flesh-colored tights, then some of the girls wear those. So it's a personal choice, but I am not allowed to let that influence my overall opinion.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next topic. Man buns or ponytails on men?
My thoughts are I don't particularly care for them, but it just happens to be their hair is so long that they tie it up there to keep it from flopping into their eyes. I get that. But I also think your lady just spent up to $10,000 for a dress. She is tan. She spent all this money to get her hair done, and you can't do a haircut?
Yeah.
That's okay. My personal opinion, but I do not let that interfere with my judging. I just ignore that.
Of course. All right. Visible tattoos on the dance floor. What are your thoughts?
Well, I hate tattoos. That's me as a human being. I hate tattoos. But I have seen people cover them with the spray tan, the airbrushing, and bodybuilders do that too. They use a lot of their tanning to cover the great contrast of the tattoos so it isn't so distracting.
Right.
Anything you do when you are dancing, if you have an obvious distraction, then you're asking us to be distracted by whatever you're showing us.
Right.
And that's that. It doesn't affect me. I've seen them. I actually saw a girl one time, pro, who had this great tattoo on her back, and it spanned her entire back. But what she did was she rhinestoned it in the colors of her dress, and I thought, well, that was very clever because it saved you a bunch of money. having them sew something like that into your dress. Did that make my mark change? No, but it was impressive.
I would like to know what your top five pet peeves are, and we'll start with your least egregious pet peeve with number five, and we'll work our way up to number one.
Footwork is always important. I see people do heel leads in rumba. I see people do heel leads after a lockstep in quick step or in waltz or something, and I think that's an infraction. And with invigilation now, the invigilation committee took months and months and months and years to form a viable format that people would try. We would try to get people to understand this is why these parameters are in place.
Okay.
Because we want people to stay in their divisions. The infractions that we have in Pro-Am a lot is that somebody will dance from beginning bronze all the way up through full silver. If you're a full silver dancer, what are you doing dancing beginner bronze? That's just wrong, and that's a lie.
Okay. So could I qualify that pet peeve as kind of knowing what you are allowed to dance in a given proficiency level and making sure you follow those rules, particularly with syllabus and also really fundamental technique infractions?
Yes. First, technical infractions, which is footwork.
Okay, so that's your number five pet peeve. Okay, next one is the dancing out of proficiency.
And out of your level, yes.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so we did five and four. So what's your number three?
Third would be coming off time.
Oh, yeah.
Which really should be one. But
yeah.
but because there are other things that are greater in my mind, third is a technical flaw of not understanding music well enough to be able to keep on time. And you do whatever it takes to understand the music enough to be able to think and speak in cadence. That's all a man has to learn, is learn to speak in cadence. Just like in the military, if I speak at a certain cadence, I can keep the time.
Okay. Number two.
I only have one more, and it's the biggest one, and that's bullying.
All right, well, let's put number two and number one together if it's that big.
Okay, because this can happen both on and off the floor.
Okay.
Bullying.
Oh,
people who get on the floor and they bully other competitors, they run into them or they don't give them space or they don't pay attention to where they are. And the biggest one is a competitor that runs a judge off the floor.
Oh,
because
God.
Their routine,
does that happen?
Because, oh, yes, ma'am. Because their routine can't be altered. And I think, okay, this is the problem for us, because now you are aggressively engaging judges, but you don't want them to be able to do anything about that.
Yeah.
I had a couple in quick step run one of their long walls, hop, skip, jump, skip, 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 and ran a judge right off the corner of the floor she was standing on.
Wow.
And I thought,
floor craft. I mean, that's
you're asking, but that, well, that's, we, more people are starting to learn it or use it, but there was a long period where it just went in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Where no one was teaching it. I have to blame the coaches. I have to blame the choreographers. I have to blame everyone on their team that didn't get them to understand that.
Yeah.
And that's bullying.
Yeah. And there's so much good that comes out of dancing ballroom. And that is like, that is probably my biggest pet peeve is just lack of courtesy and kindness. You know, you see that sometimes. I mean, we're all competitors, but once, you know, mostly think that Pat and I are competing with ourselves, just always to be better than we were the last time. And
that's the idea. That's what we should all be doing.
Yeah. But some people,
personal growth.
Some people let, I think, the competitiveness get, you know, they have a different approach. And anyway,
Certainly. Right.
Well, so one last thing that I'd want, if I can keep you just for a little bit longer, one last thing I wanted to talk about is, you have had a very interesting life, and I'd like to talk about the parts of your life that might surprise people in the ballroom dance community. They might not know. I mean, you're such an iconic judge. People know who you are. You coach, you judge, you're master of ceremonies. You have a big ballroom personality, but lots of people might be surprised to know that you had quite a prolific career as an actor. You had roles that required you to be a SAG-AFTRA and Actors Equity member. And so I'd like to hear about that. I'd love to hear how you got started in theater and film and opera. And then, you know, eventually what inspired you to transition over to the ballroom?
I started theater because my mother put me in a speech class because she thought I was too shy and too reserved. So I did that and I tried out for a play. It turns out you were okay. You got a role. And then the next time they do a musical, they said, do you sing? I don't know. Well, apparently you do because I got the lead in the musical. And then they said, well, do you dance? I said, well, I haven't, sort of. I mean, my parents go out to the Czech ballroom or the Polka Palace on Saturday night. And yes, I've been dancing since I was five. And they said, well, you have since you're the lead, you have a big dance number in act two, so you better get to class. So I went to class, ballet, jazz, tap, flamenco. I had to study mime to do a role called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off in a professional theater. So all these things happened. And then I wanted to go to New York to go to Juilliard. And I asked my parents, they said, no, we're putting you through law school. And I said, I'm not going to do that. So somebody invited me. I had no place to go, nothing to do, just graduating or just getting out of college. And somebody took me to a Fred Astaire studio as a guest. And they showed me my first three introductory lessons, asked me if I wanted to buy lessons and be a student. I said, I don't have any money. And they said, well, then what about being a teacher since you're a dancer? You've been a dancer for 15 years now. We'll pay you. So that's how I got in.
Wow, that's interesting. Necessity is the mother of invention, right?
It's the right. If you're going across the river and you're on the right path, the next stone will pop up in front of you.
Exactly. I want to know about some of your performance credits. I know that you have a lot of stage credits. What are some of those?
I was supposed to replace Michael Crawford in Phantom in L.A.
Oh, really?
At the time that he was about to leave the show, and I was securing the role, and another television star came along and wanted it, and he was famous. I was not. That's the end of the story. So I stayed in New York. I went to New York to do theater, but they had stopped hiring voices on Broadway. They were hiring young, pretty people, and they stuck a mic on you, and you didn't need a voice. So
right.
that was that. So I went to opera. And luckily, I had been professionally, classically trained, just like in Oklahoma City, all of us, Kelly O'Hara, Christy Chenoweth, me, all went to the same teacher.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. Okay.
So we were all trained classically first. And so I made the transition just to work, and I got a lot of great opera roles with people who sang at the Met, even though I didn't ever sing at the Met. I didn't stay around long enough. But my reason for going was I went, and my first show in New York was Student Prince, an operetta.
Uh-huh.
And I had that, and that's where I got my equity card. Actors Equity is the actors union for Broadway.
Okay.
And then if years later, if you were a principal in Equity, you could automatically get your Screen Actors Guild card, which is for the movies.
Right.
And then AFTRA, when I did 2 weeks on All My Children on ABC.
Oh, my God.
You are required. The other thing, you can qualify for SAG or AFTRA, and then you're allowed to join, but you have to qualify.
Right.
And AFTRA, if you're on screen for 2 weeks, you are required to register. And so AFTRA is American Film Television Recording Artists.
Okay. So it pretty much covers everything you're ever going to
do. So TV, movies, and stage.
Right. So I have a question. I mean, this is kind of goofy, but I grew up watching All My Children, watched it in college. What was Susan Lucci like? Did you meet her?
She was adorable.
Was she?
She was humble, sweet, personable. All the women on the show were gems, and all the men on the show were struggling with their egos.
Oh.
So we had one scene where the actor was supposed to do the eulogy for his wife who had been killed in a plane accident or something, and we were there, and I was a glorified extra. I was a friend of Opal, who was Susan Lucci's best friend.
Opal. Yeah.
And so when I was there, he kept goofing his lines. And when he goofed his lines, he'd get madder, he would curse more, and he'd get further off the track. And it took us 3 hours to produce a 5-minute scene. So that's what television is about for people who haven't experienced that. It is why a lot of people say it's really difficult work.
Well,
but they were all joyful, lovely people to be around and work with.
That's nice to hear. That is really nice to hear. Well, John, I am afraid that that is all the time we have today. I really enjoyed talking to you and want to thank you again for letting me pick your brain. For our listeners, can you tell us where you'll be coaching and judging next?
I have an event coming up in Volunteer State in Nashville. I'm doing Heart of America this year in Kansas City. I am always at Grand Nationals in Miami. And so far, those are the only contracts I'm sitting on.
Okay. And I know...
But I'm coaching other places in the around town. From my home, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma.
Okay. I was about to ask, I know you're a busy coach, but if people are interested, is there a way to get on your lesson schedule? Is there a way for them to reach out and talk to you? Is Facebook a good option? What's the best way to reach out to you?
I am on Facebook. Yes.
Okay.
And I keep getting friend requests from people I've never met. So I don't know whether they, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to pet peeves for a second. People who friend me the week before they know I'm about to judge them on Facebook.
Okay.
What is that about? I don't quite get that.
That's almost repulsive.
That can go into my number two slot.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to get on John's schedule, probably the best thing to do is not send him a friend request, but message him.
Messenger works.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to click the follow button and share it with your friends. If there's someone from our ballroom dance community that you'd like to get to know a little better, reach out and let me know. My email address is in the show notes, along with lots of other interesting stuff. And until next time, keep on dancing.